Thank you. We'll call the Division of Tourism to order. And the first thing we're going to do is Representative Davids will move the minutes from last year.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Welcome. And thanks for coming. You know, we always seem to pack the room. This is awesome. That's the whole goal we talked about this morning, didn't we, Tom? We're going to move right into this because obviously everybody knows this. We've got state address today. People are busy. They're all over the place. Some of the members might have to leave to go to tax committee or other committees. So we'll get started real quickly. And what I'll do is the chair will move House File 2955 with recommendation to move it to the Commerce Committee at this point. And we're really only going to be talking about Section 10. That's what the case resorts. This bill, just so you know, is getting a little bit controversial somewhat in local areas up north. So we're not going to try to rewrite statute today, but we're going to talk about resorts and see how we can help. And so with that, we're going to move right into John Edmund. Is he here? There he is. Welcome to the committee, and if you'd state your name and show us that box you're carrying, we can get started.
I come with props. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Edmund. I'm Director of Explore Minnesota Tourism. I'll be relatively brief. I was asked to talk about tourism awareness and research, but I do want to just make a very general statement about the issue of resorts and shoreland management. Because in 1870, there were over 2,500 resorts in the state of Minnesota. Today, there's less than 1,000 resorts in Minnesota, and it's a critical part of our tourism industry. From June 2003 to 2005, we lost nearly 100 resorts, according to our database. And the issue of shoreland management, we've worked with Congress of Minnesota Resorts and the Resort and Campground Association for many, many years. We developed a PR strategy where we're, instead of talking about the details of all of the shoreland zoning regulations, we just try to talk about the importance of resorts, quality of life in the state of Minnesota, access to natural resources. We also participated in the Shoreland Standards Advisory Committee through a member of my staff and Coastal Honors Day Save Our Shorelands Conference last year. And I'm not going to get into specifics of that, other to say that we need to improve water quality while also balancing the need to maintain economic viability of resorts. And I hope you just keep that in mind as you're considering this issue. The two items I think that was listed on your agenda that I was going to talk about is awareness and research. And again, I'll be relatively brief. The Explore Minnesota Tourism Council and agency went around the state last year to find out what's important to grow tourism in the state of Minnesota. And the industry told us that obviously marketing is the number one thing we need to focus on, the funding of that marketing. But also they said that we needed to do a better job to increase the awareness of the importance of tourism. And so we're starting some short-term as well as long-term strategies to try to increase the awareness of tourism in the state of Minnesota. Hopefully you have all seen this cereal box that we have produced, which is just sort of a fun way to talk about the fact that we are a $10 billion industry, that 230,000 jobs in the leisure and hospitality industry in Minnesota, over $1 billion in state and local taxes. And we decided to do it in sort of a fun way as opposed to just a brochure that will end up in your files somewhere that you may or may not have a chance to look at. Hopefully this is something that people will keep, put it on their desk or in their shelf. The other thing that it does do is it also gives information on the back about local economic impact. So you can specifically see, when I talk $10 billion industry in the state of Minnesota, maybe that doesn't resonate, but what is leisure and hospitality in terms of gross sales, state and local taxes, employment in your counties, in the counties where you work? And that's all listed here. And in addition to that, we also have information on our website. This is just a sampling of some of the information that we have. If you go to exploreminnesota.com, we've received some new information. Actually, as a result of language that was put into our appropriation last year that required the Department of Revenue now to provide us this data. on economic impact of tourism on a county level. And so we're getting that information that's available on the web. So if you want to know a little bit more about economic impact of tourism in your area, that's the place you can go. And I guess the last thing I'll say about awareness is this is really a grassroots effort. All the people in this room, the various resort associations, the statewide lodging associations are using this as a tool not just to talk to the legislature, but also to talk to local elected officials, to talk to county officials. It's not issue specific. I mean, whether your issue is zoning, whether your issue is stadiums, or whether it's fire marshal fees, this just shows that this industry is important. And we all need to be on the same page when you're considering these issues to see that travel and tourism is a big industry in our state, comparable to agriculture, and it needs to have consideration no matter what issue you need to be you are having to address. I'll just kind of leave here because there's a lot of people you probably want to hear from other than me, but Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them at this time.
You did a good job, Mr. Edmund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members, if you'd like to pick up a copy, we have them here.
Do you have one with cereal in it? I mean, mine is...
You have to understand that Representative Moe has sled dogs.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Moe, they were, I think, assembled here, so they're basically, the contents is 100% pure Minnesota air, although since it was sealed with air in the state capitol, I'm not sure how pure that is.
It's hot air.
Mr. Edmund, I wouldn't go any further with you.
All right. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chairman. Chairman, is that hot air?
That's why we didn't go any further.
Oh, okay.
Next, we've got Joel Carlson, Congressman of Minnesota Resorts. Could you identify yourself and proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Joel Carlson, Legal Research and Government Affairs Business here in St. Paul. And here once again on behalf of the Congress of Minnesota Resorts. And before I start on shoreline management, just had one thing on behalf of the Congress, that an item of business we didn't accomplish at our fall conference. The Congress gave Representative House, in his absence, a Legislative Excellence Award at our fall conference for his work on resort issues through a number of years. Both the Labor Day school start time, our tax issues, and a number of other resort-related issues, game and fish. And you were unable to be with us in Brainerd in October, but we wanted to make sure that we recognized and acknowledged your hard work on behalf of the resort. So thank you.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Did we do that, Representative Davids?
We
had recess.
We just did.
Okay.
You know, all I get is a box of hot air.
I'm on the tax committee. Both can kind of alternate.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for taking the time to hear for us what is, we believe, an emerging and important issue for the resort industry, and that is the issue of shoreland regulation. We would like the committee to know a couple of things about the 65-page bill that Representative House introduced. Number one, it is not our intention to advance that bill across the goal line during the 2006 legislative session. And we intend to begin the discussion with the legislature and affected stakeholders that resorts in particular and the state in general need a consistent policy of shoreland regulation for the ongoing viability of resorts and for improved water quality and management, environmental management. The start of that process was the governor who, through his Clean Water Initiative, asked that that a stakeholder group be convened to look at our existing law, which has been in place since 1970 and was last updated in 1989, to have a stakeholder group look at that existing set of shoreline regulations and bring forth a set of rules that in its current form are an alternative set of rules for zoning purposes. And what we have seen through the Congress and through other resort groups who all participated in this study is that the inconsistent application of zoning requirements have a drastic impact on particularly small resorts. And I've got a couple of our members here who were on that stakeholder group that would like to go over some of the highlights in what the alternative regulations do and what they don't do. But we need you to know that if you lose your resort through a natural disaster and you have no ability under the existing Shoreland Management Act or through local zoning to rebuild that resort, that's a problem. And we talk about resorts being lost through sale for development for residential purposes. But you need to know that an equal problem is when you're unable to upgrade your resort, whether it's putting on a new roof or new windows or a deck, or to rebuild after a natural disaster, has an equally negative impact on the ability of resorts to remain viable businesses. And that is going on today. And so we want to work with the counties, townships, and cities to see if we can, over the coming months, come to a consistent set of regulations that would apply for resorts across the state. And we're starting that process today, and we appreciate you introducing a lengthy bill. I personally am not immune to controversy, and so it doesn't matter to me necessarily that people are talking about this, because it does need to be discussed. And some of the issues that you hear about, whether it's buffer strips or density, those are all issues that this legislature needs to address. And we think it's naive to believe, as the Congress, that it's naive to believe that the legislature is going to invest somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 to $80 million on clean water initiatives and a host of infrastructure improvements to wastewater treatment and water facilities, that the legislature is not going to look at the impact of residential and commercial use and development on lakes. And we want to be in front of the curve, and that's why we're here in front of you today. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Dana Pitt to come up and join me and Ed Pusey, who are on the stakeholder group. The document I'd like the committee to look at is the Minnesota's Alternative Shoreland Management Standards, dated December 12, 2005. And I'd like to have them walk through a little bit of that document and highlight a couple of the areas. I want you to know that the bill that was introduced does not just focus on resorts. It is the work product, the entire work product of the stakeholder group. And we wanted to introduce that for two reasons. One, we didn't feel that we had great credibility just in introducing a patchwork or only the things that we liked out of that stakeholder group. So that is why the whole thing is before you. And others have interest in the balance of that bill. Our focus is obviously on the resort sections and how it impacts the ability of resorts to remain viable. And that's what we'd like to talk with you about. But we didn't feel we had great credibility if we just went with the resort-only section as our first blush out of the blocks. If you notice on page 3 of that December 12th document, you will notice the lengthy list of participants who have all come to the conclusion that these regulations, alternative regulations, are far from embraced and supported by everyone, but they all recognize that these shoreline management rules need to be modernized, they need to be updated for current practices, and I believe that most of the people on the list embrace most of the provisions that are before you. So with that, Mr. Chairman, happy to answer any questions, and maybe Dana and Ed can come up and walk through some specifics on what we feel are needed and beneficial updates for resorts to remain viable. great success with our life jackets last year that we tried to be a little unique this time, and there's nothing that symbolizes Minnesota's resorting industry better than a bobber. And one of the CMR's mottos is a family vacation on a good fishing lake. And that does embody the resort experience for many Minnesotans. So you're going to see some bobbers floating around today, and hopefully to draw attention to the need for preserving our family-owned resorts.
Mr. Carlson, as a former chair that worked here, Republican chair, and he always used to say peace in the valley. And I would urge you at some point to make sure that the VFL caucus and the Republican caucus each get one of those bobbers that we can move from floor to floor, to office to office. You can't give it to us personally, but I believe you could give it to each caucus, and that would create peace in the valley, and would it would help a great deal, I think.
It does symbolize what we're talking about here on behalf of the resorting industry. So we'll try and follow through on that.
It depends, too, on what the chairman's going to put in one of those bobber coolers as he passes it around.
I learned that from that chairman that had peace in the valley also.
As chairman of the Ag Committee, I'd suggest milk.
Who would like to go first, Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Dana Pitt. I own Bailey's Resort on Leech Lake in Walker. And some of the stuff I wanted to talk about, Joel has already talked over, but I just wanted to touch on some of the kind of an overview of the regulations and how they affect us, and Ed had some more specific parts of the regulations and how they're going to help us in the future. As you know, resorts need help with zoning issues. It's becoming probably one of the biggest issues we have as far as our survival right now. You know, we can adjust to different market needs and that, but we're having a hard time adjusting to different zoning regulations right now that are kind of beyond our control. Right now, the state sets a floor line standard for zoning regulations, and beyond that, counties and townships can make it more strict as they deem necessary in their areas. Those regulations are making it impossible for us to continue as resorts. We're not able to expand or even rebuild should a fire or wind or something like that happen. It's resulted in a patchwork of regulations where every county is different. Some counties are somewhat favorable to resorts right now. Others are, you know, impossible for resorts to survive in the way they are now. About a year ago, the DNR did come up with a plan to come up with new alternative regulations. Ed and I both sat on that committee as members of the CMR, along with about 35 other stakeholders, lake associations, county officials, environmental people, just all different groups around the state that were interested in our lakes. We had many different views, many different concerns. The meeting started out kind of contentious, and we didn't know which way we were going to go. It was looking bad for us at one point. We all had the same goal of protecting our lakes. That's the reason for the shoreline regulations. We just had some differences of opinion on how do we get there and still be able to survive. A year later, in November, in December, after a lot of work, the group finally came together and signed off, so to speak, on that final draft, and all these different various groups agreed that this will work for the state of Minnesota, and our resort associations agreed that this will work for resorts. We can live with this, we can survive with this, and protect our lakes at the same time. Resorts in general are good stewards of the lake. We were seeking standards that not only protected the lake, but also needed to help our business and allow us to remain viable. What we came up with, if we can get this passed through on a statewide level, would give us consistent statewide standards that allow resorts to repair, replace, and grow in order to remain in business and keep our places open. We're one of the last places that the general public can access our lakes for a reasonable cost. It's becoming more and more impossible for the general public to enjoy our lakes up there the way glacier development then has gone. And these regulations, if we can get these pushed through the resort portion of it, will allow us to stay in business and keep ourselves available to the public. If Mr. Goosey wants to get into some specifics, unless there's any questions for me.
Mr. Goosey? Representative Mone, do you have a question?
Yeah. You might remember Ron, who owned Coles Resort, who ultimately sold it, Coles Resort up on Big Turtle, and he sold that resort 2 years ago after a cabin burned on the lake. And it took him 6 months to get all the permits that he needed from the from the county, from the township, to rebuild that cabin just on its same location, virtually identical to the cabin that burned before. It so frustrated him, and it was a series of things that he ultimately sold that resort and moved to Iowa, I mean, of all things. So, could you just maybe address that case and how these new shoreland ordinances would have made that easier for him? Perhaps we'd still have him as a resort owner in northern Minnesota.
Matter of fact, I can.
Mr. Pussy, identify yourself just for the sake of one time.
I'm Ed Pussy. I own Pumoose Resort from Bemidji, Minnesota, representing this Congress of Minnesota Resort. Matter of fact, that is one of the main points that this shoreline rules will address, is rebuilding in basically the same footprint as the existing cabin, such as the catastrophe there. In the impact zone, in many cases, which are is to meet and also meet exist other governmental regulations such as bedroom sizes, ADA, things like that, that may comply. Where one, as a, for example, somebody needs to rebuild it, and the health department says, but you need to meet these bedroom sizes and some ADA requirements. Well, you may expand that away from the lake and to meet those codes, just meet those codes, not way beyond that. And along with that, you would probably, there would be some requirements of addressing some buffers and things like that to address the water quality at the same time.
Follow-up question. Mr. Pussy, my understanding then is the county and the township would not have been able to require Ron to come up with any additional or meet any additional requirements beyond the standards that we're setting here for the state. Is that correct?
Mr. Pussy.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Moll, there may be some buffer requirements along with that of addressing some of the kind of give and take. For instance, if the owner already has addressing many of the water quality things in front of that piece of property, he may instantly qualify. If not, if there is room to for some water quality improvements, then he would have to probably meet those things.
Mr. Chairman, members, just to maybe focus our attention on that point on page 51 of that on the shoreline management standards. It'll show up on page 51 on the bottom. That really lays out the issue that Representative Moe is getting at, which is the ability to rebuild within the shore impact zone. And I would refer you to item A, subparagraph 1. This allows, as a matter of right, the ability of a resort to rebuild within the shore impact zone and to expand to minimally meet code requirements. And that's the language that we're talking about on page 51. As to the best management practices, there are some different tiers to that, and it really goes by how big your resort may happen to be. If it's over 20 units, you have some additional requirements of how your mitigation or how your erosion control should be handled. If it's under 20 units, you can just work with your local unit government to get that plan approved. And so, you know, we think that language, which we do not have today, and is precluded in many areas today, is one of the most significant improvements that we are also, with the stakeholder group for several months over, and that is probably one of the more significant improvements on this. And the water quality enhancements that may be attended to a rebuilding or remodeling, we think need to be addressed, and legislature needs to know what they are. But they are an affordable trade-off for the ability to build and expand your resort facility.
Mr. Carlson, I've got a question just on that. Number one, I'm under A. It's the way it's written, and I don't have a problem with it. I just want you to, I think it's written with lawyerese in mind. No offense. But be permitted to minimally meet federal, state, or local dwelling standards or codes. And here's where I'm going to close it. Provided there is no increase in structure footprint lakeward or no increase in structure width as measured parallel to shore. That's really saying the footprint can be bigger. Just on those two ways, it can't be.
It has to go to the back.
I like the way you wrote that.
When we say, Mr. Chairman, minimally, make that, Mr. Pussy, clarify that. The Department of Health has a 60 square foot requirement for bedroom space per occupant. And you may have a 100 square foot bedroom. Right now, today, there's no ability for you to add on that 20 square feet to meet that code. This would allow that. Now, what it doesn't allow, and we acknowledge, it doesn't allow you to add three bedrooms. It allows you to meet that zoning or that health department requirement or be ADA compliant, whether it's increasing the impervious coverage for a ramp to make your facility ADA compliant. We don't have that ability right now today. In many areas, there are no opportunities to do much of anything in the shortage time zone. That is a big issue for us. If we could lift out one thing and have the legislature adopt that, that would be it. I mean, this is a big deal for the 900 or so resorts that we have remaining, for them to remain viable. And they need to update to have amenities that that the tourist population is interested in. And if you can't do it, you're gonna stagnate and die. No matter how valuable your lakeshore is, I mean, you need to be able to upgrade your facility both from this passage of time, but also from the amenities you can offer.
Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering if I can really appreciate the situation between, on the one hand, resorts need to rebuild or they have to comply with other state regulations, and on this hand, they're precluded from doing that according to the language. Have you talked with, say, the health department or some of the others? It appears that perhaps you're approaching the problem of, this group says we have to abide by this standard and so-and-so says we have to have this standard. Have you talked with the health department and some of the others as well? To see if there are some changes they could make rather than having all the changes come from the shoreland side of the equation.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Arizona State, we absolutely have. And they are, I would say, very easy to work with on existing resort operations if you're not quite there yet or if you're slightly under on your room size. They have been amenable to working with resorts across the state. The issue becomes their hands being somewhat tied when there is a remodel, an expansion to an existing facility. There, their hands are somewhat tied where they do not have the ability to allow a non-conformity to continue. And this would allow you to correct the non-conformity when you're upgrading. And so to the extent it's sitting there today, no harm, no fault. They're not making you do anything with it. When you have to upgrade and do something, then their hands are tied on about letting the non-conformity continue. And this allows you to correct that.
I had a follow-up question. And actually, I was kind of wondering... Of the people that were listed, on the advisory committee, how did that shake out, when you said that it wasn't universal agreement, but, you all came together on this standard, and I'm just wondering how did it come out, who was agreeing, of the other members, did they come to a conclusion that they liked the standards, A on page 51, or how did that work?
Mr. Carlson or
both
Dean and Ed were on that group and were at the final meeting. They're probably in a better position to answer that. But I can tell you that, like a legislative deliberation, there were a number of issues where there were give and take among the stakeholder group. Things that were critically important, like what we just went over for results, were recognized by the other stakeholders as something that we can live with. And that's a group that generally doesn't have a very good feeling about allowing a nonconformity to continue or to have expansion and maturing if that don't, but they understood the importance of that issue to resorts. And so I would say it was a given thing that I'd like these two gentlemen to give you some personal experience.
Mr. Chairman, yep. The committee was made up, like I said before, of a bunch of different groups. We had vastly different interests in that. I think originally this project was supposed to go from about January to June. That was kind of our timeline when we started. We didn't finish up until December. So basically, we didn't finish up until we all did come to an agreement that this is something that we can all live with. It wasn't just that, okay, time's up, here's what we got, we're going to go with it. We stayed until we all came to the understanding that, you know, none of us probably got everything that we wanted to. This isn't exactly like if it was just us writing it, and it isn't exactly like a lake association might write it. But it is something that everybody, we didn't actually sign off on it, but so to speak, we signed off and said this is something that we can all live with. We agree that this is workable for everybody. Nobody was, you know, I can't go along with this or anything like that. It was something that everybody agreed that this is a good document and we can go forward with it.
Mr. Chair, was this at yesterday's meeting at Cass County, or was that a smaller subgroup of this? I believe there was a hearing on that yesterday. I didn't know if that was for the whole group or not.
Cass County.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, Cass County did have a meeting yesterday or the day before.
Yes.
Similar issues to it.
Representative Mo, did you have a question?
Yeah. Do you have a follow-up with that?
The sentence on the top of page 3 of that handout kind of embodies what I think everyone would say. And it's, although some of the alternative standards may not represent the views of all community members, it's believed that these standards are pragmatic tools for use by local governments. I mean, that's kind of how I would describe it. They're not embraced by every single one on every single point. But as a whole, this is what the community came up with as a tool to use. And what we're saying is that we know that the legislature is going to be dealing with water quality and shoreline management, and we want you to know that those parts of it related to resorts are critical for the resorting industry, and that we do have some concerns about some of them. We have been getting calls myself about the issue of buffer strips, and I just think it's unrealistic. Congress feels it's unrealistic to believe that we're going to invest all of the money that we have in water quality and are going to invest, and that we're not going to have some best management practices apply to commercial use on the lake, even though it's less than 2% of the lakeshore is committed to commercial purposes. We know that there are going to be best management practices that are going to be imposed on resorts, whether we are in front of it or not. And I'd rather help drive the bus than get run over by it.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to thank them for the thorough job that they did. And I think we would all agree that coming up with a product that is complete is sometimes more important than a product that is finished at the exact deadline. So I appreciate your time on that effort.
I'd like to thank you, too. This is, we should have done something a long time ago. We got a late start, but I think we're moving in the right direction. And well, we can't do this in 1 year's time, but the fact that we started, I think we're going to get some more finally. So I really appreciate it, and thank you.
Thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman, committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. And again, Mr. Chairman, just for others that are here and have talked to a number of them, I know that it's not your intention, nor is it ours, to force a set of regulations on any local unit of government. We want to have a cooperative process, but we do need to have these issues resolved, and hopefully with the legislature's leadership, we can accomplish that. Thank you,
Chairman. Representative Moore?
Yeah, I'm sorry to keep Could you drop that barber down? I feel like I'm talking over the Thanksgiving turkey here. Thanks. Mr. Carlson, you said something earlier that I'd just like to bring up again and like you to clarify. You talked specifically about amenities on the shore of the lake as being the number one issue that resorters would like to have addressed in this document. Could you just, you kind of drifted into that. I know you want to make that point. Could you be a little more descriptive about that and how these regulations are going to address that point?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, President Bull, as it sits right now, if you have a non-conforming cabin in the shore impact zone, and you know that it needs to be upgraded, the rooms are small, it needs improvement, but that it doesn't meet the health department codes. Presently today, you can't make that room bigger. You can't move the hot water heater out of the building and backwards. You got to do something within that footprint. And what this allows is the flexibility for you to go in and do that work to upgrade your individual cabin, your lodge, so that it is more comfortable for your guests. And, that is a significant advantage for resorts, particularly when you look at some of the other pressures that the seasonal resort industry has. I mean, the calendar gets compressed, and, if you're just unable to charge a market rate for a viable cabin, it's almost impossible to stay in business. And that's why when we talk about amenities, I'm not necessarily talking about a hot tub that goes down 106 degrees instead of 101. We're talking about basic things like room space that you need to upgrade and improve.
Representative,
just one additional point and question. I think we can all know, everybody in this room, or you wouldn't be here, we also know that the environmental impact from a resort, what we're trying to get at here, is far less, infinitely less than it would be if these resorters, if you all had to sell your resort, you get offers, I'm sure, often, and this were then to be subdivided, we'd have a planned unit development, and the potential impact on the water quality from that would be far greater than anything that a resort could possibly have. One, two, we all know this too, that the economic impact that from that planned unit development will be about 1/12 of your resort on our community. So, again, I'd like to thank you for all your efforts on this, and I think we can agree that we'll work bipartisanly to get this thing done.
And Mr. Chairman, I know Tom Day from Hospitality Minnesota wants to provide some comments. He was a member of the task force. He's done yeoman's work to help this issue along. So I know that he wants to provide some comments to the committee as well.
Thank you. Mr. Day, would you like to come up?
I would.
You know the drill, don't you?
I believe so. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you. For the record, my name is Tom Day. I work for the Minnesota Resort and Campground Association, representing over 650 hospitality and tourism-related businesses throughout the state. I'll start first as a side note to thank those of you that attended the Hospitality and Tourism Legislative Caucus meeting this morning. It's put together by a consortium of the Hospitality and Tourism Roundtable, a group of statewide organizations concerned about these issues. And I just want to let you know, I thought it was a great meeting, was pleasantly surprised at how many legislators we had there. So start by just thanking you for that. Shoreline management has emerged as one of the top issues facing the resort and campground industry at the local level. Many counties are passing moratoriums to prevent resort expansions or are creating extremely strict rules that are choking off these businesses' ability to perform. You heard John Edmonds say earlier, the resort community is at a dangerous crossroads right now. The number of resorts in the last 7 years alone has declined by 25%. There used to be almost 3,000 resorts in the state. For opening up the summer, we're expecting to be right around 900. The Minnesota Resort and Campground Association has been working on this issue along with the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, and have been integral in helping to create the DNR's new voluntary shoreline management guidelines that are before you today. While there are many flaws in this language, it goes a long way towards recognizing the need for resorts to be classified separately if they are to survive and be able to rebuild or renovate appropriately. The concepts that we support in this language include creating the ability for a resort or campground to be classified as conditional use, permitted would be even more ideal, renovate and replace existing cabins, create a fair process in using scientific data to make rules rather than public opinion. What we're concerned about in the bill, as are some of our members, is the reduction of impervious surface for resorts, reduction in density for them, the unequal standards between property owners on a lake, between a resort owner and a homeowner or cabin owner, the decreased ability of a 20-plus unit resort or campground to expand, and the restrictions prohibiting a tourism-related business to use new and unique ownership structures to be able to cash flow the property. We've chosen not to take a position on this document specifically, although we did sign off and endorse it. Representative Saylor asked a question as to how we came to a consensus. I think one of the main reasons was about halfway through the process, it was determined that this wasn't going to go through the formal rulemaking process, that at some point it became just voluntary standards that a county or municipality could take bits and pieces of it if they wanted or take it in mass. And so I think that's when a lot more people bought into the process. The reason we haven't taken a formal position on this particular bill is we feel that it will help some resorts, but it will also hurt some resorts. So we want to see how the voluntary guidelines are received before we move forward with the language that would mandate them. But we do appreciate having the forum to discuss it. With that, I can stand for any questions.
Representative Monk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Day, how might it hurt some resorts? Could you give some specific examples?
The reduction in impervious surface, the reduction in density, there are some resorts now that aren't going to be conformity. The setbacks have gone further. There are some changes in natural environment resorts or lakes that will prohibit the growth of resorts or new resorts. So there are still a lot of concerns. We haven't. Each resort is uniquely different. And trying to put one standard on the resort community as a whole is very difficult because it's going to work for some and it's not going to work for others. And that's why we kind of want to shake out the pros and cons in this before we move forward. But this is a great forum to be able to start doing that.
If a resort weren't in compliance, say, with the density or impervious surface requirements based on this these standards, what would happen to them? And maybe.
Well, first of all, Mr. Chair, Representative Moe, first of all, these are voluntary standards, so it's going to come down to as to whether the current DNR structures are voluntary. It will come down to the fact as to whether a county municipality adopts voluntary guidelines in mass or not. If they chose not to adopt the voluntary standards and are applying the current DNR regulations of shoreline management, a resort may or may not be able to expand or grow, or the setbacks may change and they may deem them as non-conforming needs. So the impact on an individual resort could be profound.
Mr.
Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Day, talking about the impervious surface a little bit, that seems to be a topic that comes to the top of the pile quite often. And quite often, and in the past, it's been probably a 25% rule. There's some counties talking 18% rule, there's 20% rule. Can you give me a little feedback on what your group felt was a good standard, how they came to that conclusion? And then I've heard in some counties they're using some different types of technology with block that are impervious block that are qualified for driveways and for sidewalks and stuff. And other counties aren't allowing that. If we're going to do statewide standards that meet this criteria, shouldn't we be looking at the technology that's out there to help qualify those?
Mr.
Dean? Mr. Chair, Representative Simpson, absolutely. I think as far as how we came up with the number, it was based on scientific data. It was based on, I think, overall just a concept that people thought, it's this number now, we need to reduce it. If we're going to improve water quality, flat out we're just going to reduce the number. But you're absolutely right. There's technology available out there. There are pervious surfaces out there that will prevent it. I think one of the biggest things that we discussed and that some of the resorts talked about is you may have more impervious surface on your resort, but if you mitigate it with buffer strips, drainage systems, if you can prevent more water from running into the lake by doing other things necessary, then how impervious your resort is or isn't shouldn't really come into play. You could have a resort that's possibly 30% impervious surface, but that they've done everything else to prevent water runoff, there's zero water runoff. And so impervious surface is one way to judge the guidelines, but it shouldn't be the only one. And yes, there is new technology available that should also be built into this.
Representative Simpson?
And just to that point, will this technology, if we create a standard, do you feel that this will have the ability to make those changes, those technology changes? Or are we setting up, or are we setting ourselves up for a situation where we don't aren't able to do a look back or aren't able to make a change?
Mr. Chair, Representative Simpson, yes, you do run the risk of that. However, there are some things built into this as well. There's the review, the scientific review panel, that if you were able to go forward and show that you do have zero water runoff, that you should be allowed to do some of these other things. And that's where I said one of the high points here is using actual scientific data, how much water is being run off, rather than a public perception of, well, 15's got to be better than 20.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you do put yourself a little bit in a box. I mean, anytime you set regulations this way, as opposed to the voluntary guidelines that are already there, you're going to run that risk of putting yourself into a box. However, I think the resort community feels that as loose as the standards are and there's a shotgun approach in different counties, that I think we do need to start boxing the counties in to some degree. And so that's why we're supportive of the concept of moving this ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I appreciate where you're going with it, and I think we do need to come up with some standardization. I just do have a little bit of a problem with the fact that as property owners, and we do have property rights, and I'm just afraid that if we're not careful, that if we let some of these standards get set into play, that they're going to be so rigid that we're going to not only stop our development that we have today, but we're going to stop all future development. And I don't think that's the goal of this this operation. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simpson, I think we agree with you as well, but I think we're seeing that some of the counties are already pushing the envelope on that. And so we're trying to find a place to stop that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I think there's someone here from the DNR that would like to speak for a few minutes.
Sure.
Identify yourself for the tape, please, and then
proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kent Lacasmo, I'm the Director of the Division of Waters for DNR. And also here, Russ Schultz, who is the one that ran the this effort to update the shoreline standards, is here. And from the testimony that I've heard so far, it seems like there's probably some clarification that should be provided. We have an existing set of state shoreland standards or shoreland rules that represent minimum standards. The counties or local governmental units, counties or municipalities, have to adopt those minimum standards. They can be more restrictive if they wish to be. And I've heard some comments here that there is a desire to have this resort standard be the standard and have that mandatory across the state and not have the flexibility for local governments to be more restrictive if they desire or be different. I would expect that you would hear some pushback on that issue from local government. The process that we went through here, we recognize that certainly for resorts, I was at the meeting they had at Rutgers on Sugar Lake, I can't recall when that was, and with the resorts associations. And they made a valid point that for resorts that want to continue as resorts, we should be able to accommodate them specifically in the rule. And we undertook this effort for a process for the five-county area in central Minnesota. And initially when we started that, we were talking about having eventually having it evolve into a rule process. Through those discussions, it was determined that they would become voluntary standards. So there's not a need for a rule to create a voluntary standard. And so we aren't going through a rule process. And these voluntary standards are available for local governments to adopt, whether they're within this five-county area or outside of it. And the counties or local governments can pick which pieces of this they like to they would like to adopt and go through that process. All of the existing shoreland regulations that governments, local governments have right now have a provision in them that allow for flexibility. So it's not this definitive set standard that the state that you can't vary from. Local government would have to make an argument that they should be able to vary this standard because of whatever unique circumstances, and we would evaluate that and then decide, you know, whether or not we would agree or not. The department still has the authority, the responsibility to approve those local changes. What this process has done through the five county and these alternative standards that that you have in the bill and that are discussed today are essentially, if you look at that as a package of pre-approved flexibility. If a local government would come to us with something out of that package, they are pretty much guaranteed of our approval. If they wanted to vary from those standards, we'd have to look at it and evaluate and see if they had adequate justification. So that's kind of how this this all fits together. We recognize through the process that, and you know, it's difficult to write a statewide standard for any type of thing because the state is so varied and the lakes are pretty varied throughout the state, the resources are varied, and local governments are pretty different. So when you try to do a statewide standard, it's more difficult. And that's one of the reasons the last time around when we did shoreland rules, we provided for that flexibility standard. So we could adapt to local governments or unique circumstances across the state. One of the concerns we have with this bill, and I know that it's probably not going to, well, I guess it's stated that this isn't set for passage this year. Putting the definitions in law, we think, may create some problems, so we'd have to look at that. We think that potentially could be problematic. Otherwise, this putting the voluntary standard in law, passing it statutorily, doesn't. We're not sure what the value of that entire bill would be. I think there are pieces of it that maybe we can direct, if the desire is to direct counties, all counties, to adopt some standard for resorts. I mean, that could be done in a very, you know, a simpler, more directive bill, and we could carry that out. So there's certainly room for discussion, and we're willing to work with your committee and others as this moves through the process. If there are questions specifically about this process, like I said, Russ Schultz is here, or Jim Jaffs, one of my other staff that was involved with this process, are here.
Mr. Luskell, you guys do a good job. I will say that. And I already sensed before I even introduced the bill that the department probably would not want this to be statute. They'd rather it be in-house rules. And I think in defense of yourself, the bureaucracy, most bureaucracies tend to want to be rules within their own self rather than statutes. I'm okay with that, but I think at the point where we're looking at resorts and how resorts are disappearing or how the state or local governments are making some rules in some areas that are just, people can't work with them. And then that brings us into the picture, and we have to start looking at, okay, maybe this has to be a statute. So the rulemaking people are reined in a teeny bit. But I guess my question I have for you is, no, this bill is probably, this will be the last time this bill gets heard this year. But if, let's just say, if this was a bill, this whole package was in Hackbar's committee tomorrow, and you guys had to scramble and sit down, and you don't have to commit here, we're not going to hold you to this, but would this be something that the department would be absolutely panicking about, or maybe only halfway panicking? Is there enough here that it's got a future? And I'm not going to hold you to this. I need a sense as to, with all the work that's been done, if you're going to say, you know, the commission would say, ah, this whole thing stinks and forget it, then we wasted a lot of time.
Mr. Chairman, we support what's in the, I mean, essentially what the bill is it took the alternative standards and is codifying them. The alternative standards are there. We would hope that counties would adopt them across the state. We fully support their use. So, I mean, this bill doesn't scare us. We think that there's certainly advantages to doing that, or to using these alternative standards. I'm not sure if making it, you know, putting that in a statute makes it any, and it's still a voluntary standard the way it's written in this bill. So putting it in a statute or having the alternative standards available as we do today doesn't really change anything. This doesn't seem like it's directive to local government or to DNR to make some changes. The one thing that my staff has said that may be problematic is with the definitions becoming statutory. That might be problematic. We'll have to look at that. And as far as going through a rule process, going through a formal rule process is a year and a half or 2 year effort that may or may not result in what any specific party wishes as they go into it. So, you know, sometimes the legislative process may be easier than going through a rule process. So we aren't saying, and when we looked at this, we decided not to go through a rule process because there wasn't a value in going through a rule process to develop a voluntary standard. If we want to make something mandatory, then we're directed to go through a rule process, and we would do that.
Good. One of the reasons I asked, I think it was about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I got a draft of some shoreland language, and it was pretty thick, and it just had a lot of ideas. And I think some of it came from the DNR and other places. But I read a paragraph. It was pointed out to me by a county commissioner. And the paragraph basically said that if a person were to build a deck on the back of their home, if it was in 1,000 feet of a glacial basin, they would have to get a permit from the DNR. Now, when you look up glacial basin and you look on a map, almost my whole district is in a glacial basin, besides the fact of 1,000 feet. Everybody's in a glacial basin, almost, except maybe the Cuyuna Range, you know, the iron ore. But I think Park Rapids is probably part of a glacial basin. I know Bemidji is. So when I saw that, I thought, my first reaction was, the DNR commissioner wants to issue all permits in the state of Minnesota for additions and homes. So that's why, one of the reasons is this, you guys do a good job, but I don't know where I'm going with this exactly, except that the commissioner and DNR do a good job, but we still have to watch how far we go, because we don't want the commissioner issuing permits for additions throughout the state of Minnesota.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not exactly sure what document you're referring to. It certainly wasn't anything that was proposed by the Division of Waters. And we aren't interested in dealing with individual applications for additions or decks. That's a local government responsibility, and what DNR is doing is setting some minimum standards. And we receive criticism from the other side of this issue that our standards aren't strict enough and that they should be going much further and we should be having more more authority to deal directly with some of those kinds of issues. You know, the discussion today about the impervious surface, there are in this, the alternative standards talk about having a higher level of impervious surface, or a lower threshold for impervious surface coverage, but it allows for the unique circumstances, and if you have a stormwater management plan and no water is running into the basin, they can have more of the hard surfaces. So, I mean, there's a recognition of that, and it was developed collectively through this group of 34 stakeholders.
Well, thank you very much,
Representative Chairman. Just to follow up to Representative Howe's point and question, I think I would like to have a reassurance that, in fact, I mean, this is obviously a very important issue to all of us and our constituents, and we've heard again and again that they would like some uniformity so they can plan accordingly and function as productive businesses in Minnesota. We obviously would like the DNR or at least to know that you're obviously very supportive of this and they're going to do everything in your power to provide guidance and leadership with the local units of government so that we can accomplish the goals set forth here. I mean, maybe you could speak to that as far as, you know, it seems to me now that you're more, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but your tone seemed a little bit more ambivalent than I would like to hear.
Mr. Lux, Mr. Chairman, Representative Moll. We are moving forward with these standards. We have essentially, if you look at this brochure that was handed around, in the phase three, if you open it up and look on the top, the phase three is education and outreach. We're going back around to the five counties who are included within this area and telling them exactly, they had asked for that, to have a recap after the process concludes, so we're telling them what's in there. We've been encouraging them to adopt these standards. The early draft of this had the phase three being the rural development process and going through that, but since these are voluntary, we're doing education and outreach, and we do support the use of these throughout the state. The thing that I heard different today is that where our standards have all, the Shoreland standards provide for local government to be more restrictive if they wish. And so to have a discrete standard that's there and it's uniform across the state and it can't be varied more to become more restrictive, the local government wants it, that's a huge departure from the last 35 years of Shoreland management.
Thank you.
Again, thank you very much. Mr. Carlson, did you want to make one final comment? We have to be on the House floor.
Pretty quick. Closing argument, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
You've hit the nail right on the head. And we do want to have on those basic issues a consistent statewide standard so that we don't have a patchwork quilt of zoning regulations on those core issues that are so critical to allowing resorts to stay in business. So we may not be in agreement on that, and my good friend Mr. Lacasmo and I may have to arm wrestle a bit between now and 2007, but don't leave here thinking that we don't want to have a consistent set of regulations on those core issues where hopefully we can reach agreement with the DNR, counties, townships, so that we can have on those core issues that we've identified for you a consistent set of standards. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess I can get the last word.
You never get the last word.
No, you're correct. We agree with having a minimum standard. The only difference that I'm pointing out here is that local government has historically had the ability to have a more restrictive standard. But as far as looking at these resort standards and agreeing on a minimum for that industry across the state that accommodates and allows resorts to continue as resorts, we believe is important and we support that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Carlson, final.
There, on the issue of being able to rebuild, as a matter of right, you can't be half pregnant. You either get to or you don't. The only way you can be more restrictive is to say you can prevent it, and that's the issue that we're bringing to you. Thank you.
With that pregnant pause, the chairman is going to... I'm going to lay over House File 2955. If there's nothing left to do, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.